With CarGurus Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and CarGurus Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder CarGurus is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with CarGurus at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.
The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers Podcast with you for a very special episode today. We have a special interview with former Brewers General Manager Doug Melvin as we look back on the 2008 Brewers baseball season, the year, of course, that they snapped a 26-year drought of making the playoffs for the franchise. They won the wild card that year in very dramatic fashion, and the acquisition at the center of that was, of course, CC Sabathia from the Cleveland Indians. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am host of the Brewers Podcast. We will not be joined today by Todd Rosiak and Tom Hodricourt, the beat reporters for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel covering your Milwaukee Brewers. We will catch up with them later this week on Thursday when the Brewers return home. They're taking a very brief trip out east to face Pittsburgh for three games beginning on Monday, and then they're coming back home on Thursday. They'll face the St. Louis Cardinals for a big divisional rivalry on Thursday, the first of four games, and then Kansas City Royals stop by for two games the following Tuesday and Wednesday before they're out on the road again briefly to face the Reds, and then they're back after that series. A lot of home games in this stretch of 30 games and 31 days for the Brewers. Obviously a very crucial stretch for the first place Milwaukee Brewers. They came out of the homestand at 3-3, a little disappointing after they had taken 2 of 3 from the Cubs and racked up 12 runs against the Philadelphia Phillies and Jake Arrieta on Friday. They dropped the final two games of the homestand. That included a Sunday loss where they lost 10-9. Scored 4 runs in the 9th inning, but couldn't quite come all the way back. A lot of moments where you could point and say the Brewers maybe shouldn't have given up a run there, or there, or there, and maybe they win that game. But still, 3-3 homestand, and they are in first place after the Cardinals took care of the Cubs on Sunday Night Baseball. It's a half-game lead. It's very tenuous. No, I realize that it's maybe just a sort of a name only, but it doesn't matter. The Brewers are still the best team in the National League heading into this trip out to Pittsburgh. I wanted to talk to Doug Melvin, former general manager of the Milwaukee Brewers, to get some sense of what went down in 2008 when the Brewers acquired CC Sabathia. He, of course, was the reigning American League Cy Young winner at the time. He wound up going 11-2 for the Brewers at a 1.65 ERA, an extremely memorable run that sort of culminated with the final game of the regular season when he worked a complete game against the Chicago Cubs. The Brewers won that game 3-1 on Ryan Braun's 8th inning home run. I think everybody pretty much remembers that, and then learned later that the Mets had lost their top competition for that wild card spot. That put the Brewers into the playoffs, set off a wild celebration. Sabathia was just dominant that year. I think there are a lot of highlights. The first one comes July 7th, 2008, when Doug Melvin swings the trade for Sabathia. They trade Matt LaPorta, the top prospect in the deal, Rob Bryson, and Zach Jackson, none of whom worked out long-term for the Cleveland Indians. There was also a player to be named later. Many Brewers fans know that name is Michael Brantley, who continues to have a very nice career with the Cleveland Indians. Been a decade of success for Brantley, so the Brewers can lament that part of the trade, but the Brewers did get a whale of a half season, more than a half season, with Sabathia. He went on to sign a multi-year deal with the New York Yankees, won a World Series, continued his career. The stay in Milwaukee was short, but it was very, very memorable. So I wanted to talk to Doug about the entire season in 2008. Obviously, Sabathia is the centerpiece of that, but also wanted to talk about the acquisition of Salomon Torres in the offseason. That ended up paying huge dividends. Some of the acquisition of Eric Gagne, which was maligned kind of at the time, and probably in retrospect as well. That sort of was an interesting piece to the puzzle, and just everything that was going on that crazy year 10 years ago. We've been looking back bit by bit at jsonline.com at the 2008 season. I've done recaps of the April and May of 2008. We'll do the same for the other months And certainly July will be a big one when I can discuss more in depth the CC Sabathia acquisition. So here's my conversation with Doug. We were chatting outside. There's plenty of ambient noise. You should have no trouble hearing it, but they're very early in the interview. A motorcycle drives by that's very loud. There's an airplane. There's all kinds of noise. So I forgive me for that. But again, you can hear me. You can hear him very well. So again, no Tom, no Todd, but we do have this special interview with Doug Melvin. Enjoy. My guest is Doug Melvin, senior advisor to the Milwaukee Brewers, former general manager, of course, and he was the man at the reins in 2008, 10 years ago this year, when the Milwaukee Brewers snapped a 26-year streak of not going to the playoffs. They made it. They were the wild card, the NL wild card winner that year. Of course, a very dramatic finish to this season. The CC Sabathia acquisition in July, the one that many people remember. So we're going to talk a lot about that and the season in general. Thanks for meeting with me, Doug. I know it's, I guess, 10 years ago, so it might not be, it might be foggy, but if you go back to the beginning of 08, you've got Ben Sheets. He's a stud pitcher at that point, had a very good year for the first half of 08 especially. You've got Giovanni Gallardo in his second year, Manny Parra in his second year. So the rotation has some pretty good upside. Do you remember kind of if you were looking early in the year to add a pitcher? You still had Jeff Suplan and Dave Bush. You had some veterans. Or were you pretty comfortable with how things were looking? And kind of what was the vibe around that team going into 2008?
Well, the strength of the club was offense. We had a very good offensive club and a solid lineup. And we did like our pitching. You know, obviously the more of a veteran-type staff with Suplan and Dave Bush in there and Ben Sheets. The one thing that, as the season went on, as Giovanni Gallardo got hurt and only contributed four starts, I think, over the course of the year. I think it was the playoffs. He pitched in the first game of the playoffs. But once he got hurt, then we knew that we were probably a little pitching thin at that time. So
yeah.
We, you know, hung in there. We won a lot of games with our offense. So we did, guys did pitch well enough. We had a bullpen that at the time, I think it was the year we signed Eric Gagne.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah, and hoping that he would be the closer and have a little bounce back year. But our bullpen, that was the one year. We never had a guy that saved 30 games that entire year.
Right.
I think Solomon Torres ended up being the closer.
28.
28 saves. And then a few other guys pitched in with a few saves here, there, and whatever. But, no, at that time we felt that if we could hang in, long enough that, I've always believed that there's two seasons in a baseball season of 162, and that's the July deadline, and from there moving on for a second half.
Yeah, so May 1st is the day that Giovanni Gallardo tears his ACL in Chicago. I think a lot of us remember that game. Came back and pitched an inning, but had the injury and couldn't continue. Did that change things for you guys? Did you feel like at that point you had to do something because you were going to lose Giovanni for a considerable period of time? Probably thought at the time all year with the injury.
Yeah, for the long term, we were looking at, you know, short term, we just tried to patch things up within the organization and that, but we felt that, our strength was still offense. We're going to have to, you know, it was a heavyweight fight. We have to punch out the other team and score runs and play good defense, which we did do in that, but we thought that over the long haul, we'd need a starting pitcher, and I think that's why we looked more at July 1st instead of July 31st
as
our deadline, and I always felt that if we could get somebody for that entire month, that would be more critical to us having success the second half of the year.
And I'd forgotten Ben Sheets was in a contract year that year too, so I don't know if you were thinking about 2009 at any point, you know, in 2008,
yeah,
where, you know, there was that complication as well. I'm going to jump quick, go back to the rotation in a minute, but the bullpen is interesting. You mentioned Gagne. He was sort of the higher profile signing, and then he famously kind of, that first game of the year was very famous where he blows the save, the Brewers come back and win at Wrigley Field. He did struggle, and by mid-May he wasn't the closer anymore, and that was Solomon Torres, who I think was signed just a few days before Gagne. Do you remember signing Solomon Torres? He only played the 1 year. He's 36 years old.
Yeah.
He's kind of an interesting case. He wasn't in pro baseball, kind of in the middle part of his career. Did you ever imagine that he could be the guy to be
so
important?
Well, we traded for him from the Pirates. We got him in a trade and that, but you know, we knew he had good stuff. We knew he had strong character and that, but no, at that point, you know, that was during an era, during a time period where people relied on one guy as your closer.
For sure, yeah.
And I still think there's a lot of teams that truly believe that.
Yeah.
That though you look at games today, it doesn't seem like it. But
Brewer's kind of leading the charge, actually, against that idea.
Yeah, but if you look at the Craig Kimbrell's, you know, the Raulds Chapmans and guys like that. There's teams that still would like to have that quality guy, and that's what we were hoping for with Gagné. But I don't think we felt that he was going to be a 45 or 50 save guy.
No, right.
And that's why Solomon Torres, I think Mota was on that team.
Yep,
I think another, Brian Schoos was a,
had a very good year.
Left-hander that had a very good year for us and got some huge outs in that. And so it was a good combination, you know, as far as using the bullpen the way we did. The one thing I think about our starting pitching, too, is that I know there was a lot of people that maybe thought Jeff Suppan wasn't doing the job at times in that, but the month of August, Jeff Suppan and Dave Bush were 9-0.
Really? I did not remember that.
They were 9-0 the month of August, and that was the month that we had our best month of the season.
Right.
Because in September, we were 10-16.
Yeah.
We had a losing month of September. We didn't swing the bats in September at all. We were one of the worst hitting teams in September, and that's what hurt our ball club. But after we got CC, I think we were 10 games over 500 when we got CC. We ended the season 18 over 500. But I think what CC did was, I think he elevated even the performance of other starting pitchers. It's hard to think that they would of that. But because he went deep in the games, I think it gave the Suppans, the Bushes, the Manny Parras, the Ben Sheets, they were all geared up to go out and perform at a high level too. I think it rested our bullpen so that because we did have multiple guys in the bullpen, that on CC's day, you know, Ned Yost knew that he could manage his bullpen the day before and the day after with knowing CC's going deep. But a lot of people don't know in August, Bush and Suppan were 9-0.
Yeah, I know a lot of Brewers fans will remember Dave Bush as the guy who gets the win in the playoffs. They lost the series 3-1 to Philly, but Dave Bush did have a good start there in the postseason. So you mentioned the acquisition of CC and wanting to acquire him, not at the deadline, but earlier. And I remember there was a lot of conversation about getting as many starts out of him as you could. And, you know, obviously that was a good strategy in retrospect. When did the communication line open with Shapiro and the Cleveland Indians? And Shapiro, Shapiro, I guess I...
Mark Shapiro.
Shapiro, yeah.
Shapiro.
So, because if I recall, you would talk to him about it and then come back to it, come back to the conversation about acquiring Sabathia. So when did the lines of communication open? Was that something that was going on in May and June already?
It was probably 3 weeks before, I think, in recalling it. You know, you try to identify the starting pitchers that were available. And I can't really recall what other guys we were focused on. I think we were focusing on who we thought would be the best guy available. And we had heard whispers, and our scouting had done some due diligence with Cleveland and finding out that CC was probably, they weren't going to be able to sign him, and that he was going to test the market.
Right.
And we thought that at that point, why not pursue him? Zach Manassian, our pro scouting director, identified Cleveland as a team that would be interested in Matt Laporta. And we felt that Matt Laporta had a chance to be a pretty good player. Jack Sorensic drafted him. And I went to Jack and said, Jack, if we have to give up Laporta in a deal to get a quality pitcher, are you okay with that? And I said, maybe CC Sabathia. And he said, oh, yeah. He said, if we can win, he said, I'm in favor of it. He said, I like Laporta, but I understand. And Zach said he thought Cleveland would lay. They were, at that point, they drafted college players. They liked college hitters.
Yeah.
He had a good on-base percentage. That was what Cleveland had liked. So we thought that if we started our conversations by saying, Mark, I would put Matt Laporta to start the deal and start the conversations, that would encourage them to continue conversation with us. I know the Dodgers were the other team that they're involved with.
Oh, okay, yeah. So Matt Laporta, Zach Jackson, Rob Bryson, and the player to be named later, everybody knows now, is Michael Brantley, the player who has been the best big leaguer in the deal. A lot of the rhetoric around that time was that the Brewers were going for it. I actually bristled kind of against that at the time. I figured there was... You know, it's not just 2008, and you're thinking about, you know, many years down the road. Did you embrace that, though? Did you feel like you were putting in all your chips, that 2008 was a year you really were pushing to get the Brewers to snap this playoff drought, or was it more long-term than that?
Yeah, no, I think it was important for us to try to get to the playoffs. You know, we had to battle with 11 seasons of not being 500, I think.
Right, yeah.
And then 25 seasons of not being in the playoffs.
Yeah,
so when you had a good team and you liked the team you had and the performance of Fielder and Braun, and we had brought in Mike Cameron, a veteran guy, Jason Kendall.
Yeah.
We had some veteran guys in the positional part of our ball club that were playing every day. We didn't have that guy, that horse at the in the rotation. You know, if Giovanni would have been healthy, we might not have gone for it that,
right.
in that regard. But with Giovanni hurt, that had a big part of our decision making to go for it. And you know, when you get close, I've always been a believer that if you get fairly close, you go for it. You know, you have to go for it, because you can go many years without ever getting back there again,
for sure.
because of injuries or because of players not performing. So that's why I felt that if we could get Sabathia, that we would have a chance. And I didn't know that he would come and perform for us like he did, because when we traded for him, I think he was 6-8 with probably like a 3.5, 3.8 ERA.
Right.
But he came over here, and maybe he was energized by being in a playoff race. But I think the thing that I heard from CC later was that he loved the players on our team.
Yeah.
And that, and I think that really boosted his energy and ability to go out there and pitch and perform the way he did. But he's a great competitor. You know, he's going to end up winning 260 ball games or whatever in his career.
Yeah. Do you recall with the negotiations if it was a tough sell at the end, if there were moves you had to make that, you know, maybe that player to be named later, I don't know, but was it a pretty smooth negotiation process, or did you have to, you know, sort of go back and forth to make that deal happen?
Well, I think people know, it's been written and talked about before, is that Laporta was a key guy in the deal.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the second player in the deal was a tough one. It was it was Brantley or Taylor Green.
Right, yep.
And we talked about that. And I think they were torn between which one to take. And we didn't want to give up either one of them. But we knew that they were going to have to give them up. Zach Jackson was a left-handed pitcher, a high draft pick.
Yep.
That we had gotten in
Toronto,
the Dave Bush
right.
trade from Toronto.
Yep,
he
yep.
came up. And then, but the Brantley Green thing, we went back and forth and back and forth on how to do that, and we couldn't come to an agreement, and made the suggestion that if, I said, Mark, how about if we do this? If Sabathia takes us to the playoffs,
yeah.
and we get them, then you get the choice. I'm fine. We're getting to the playoffs. I'm happy. If
of
I have
course,
to give up
yeah.
a player, you get the choice of player between Taylor Green and Brantley. And if we don't make it, then we get the choice of which one we want to keep, and we'll send the other one to you. So it was sort of a creative way of trying to make us both feel that, you know, I knew we were going to have to give up another good player, and they knew they were going to get a good player.
Right.
And then Brantley ended up getting hurt over the course of the summer and that. So it was a tough call for them at the end, too, on that, when we did end up going to the playoffs.
Yeah.
And then Bryson was another player, the pitcher that they had liked, and that. But we had a list of players, of three or four players that they had they could choose from, and that too. So that's always part of your deals that you
yep.
that you make.
And you got to give up something to get something. Brantley's had a nice career for them. He's been injured the last couple of years, but obviously the Brewers fans, at least from my perspective,
yeah.
got a whole lot out of that deal. So it did work out. So you talked about the hot August, the end of August, August 31st. Brewers were actually 80-56, which I'd forgotten that the record had gotten quite that good. There were, I think, four or five games up over the teams in the East that would have been contending with them for the wild card. And there's this game on August 31st in Pittsburgh. CC Sabathia has a one hitter. He's credited not with an error when they slow chopper to him. Ends up getting a guy on first base, and sort of everybody talks about that game. Does that stick in your craw the way it does, Brewers fans, that wasn't ruled an error and that it was a one hitter instead of a no hitter? I don't know how you feel about it 10 years later.
Yeah, you know, he was having such a great period of time with us that it would have been great for a no hitter. Would have been icing on the cake, but at that time, as a general manager, you're just wanting a win.
Yeah,
you know, you'll take the wins, and you want the players to perform well and get credit when credit's due, but I don't think it bothered CC all that much in that regard. But no, it would have been nice if he'd had a no hitter. And I remember he swung the bat for us too, and I think he hit a home run in
that
1 year. But you know, the one thing I'd look to is that almost every game that he pitched for us in Milwaukee, we sold out. I was looking up attendance. It was 42,000 almost every game that he pitched. So he made a big impact. And I do know that Ned Colletti, the Dodgers general manager at the time, he just came out with recently wrote a book. And I was reading through the book. He was telling me, I was reading the book, but he also told me in spring training when I was talking to him, they thought they had the deal for Sabathia.
Really?
Interesting. And, yeah, if you go into his book, there's a little section in there. There's a little section in there about it. He felt that he had a deal with the Indians, and he went down to tell, I think it was Joe Torre was the manager at the time, and told Joe, I think we're getting Sabathia for the following three players. And he talks about him in the book. And then he said, I just have to run it by Frank McCourt when he comes in. And Frank McCourt, they were going through issues, ownership issues with the Dodgers at the time. And Frank McCourt came in, but Torre was all excited. Ned Colletti was all excited. They thought they were getting Sabathia. And the owner came in and said that, why would we give up our top prospects for this pitcher?
Yeah.
And he nixed the deal.
Oh, wow.
And whether Cleveland would have done that deal or not, but it sounded like from Ned that they had a deal done.
Interesting.
And that the owner nixed the deal. So, you know, the support of Mark Attanasio allowing us to go and make the deal was important, too. You got to get ownership support when you make these kind
of
deals.
Of course
but,
you do.
But who's not to say if Frank McCourt said, Ned, go for it. Let's go get Sabathia. And he was from the West Coast. And, and you know, maybe CC was more interested in going there at the time, but I think he enjoyed his time in Milwaukee.
For sure. So you mentioned this earlier. Something kind of goes wrong in September. Offense starts flailing. There's that famous series. I think they lost 15 of 19 to start the month, maybe. There's that four-game series in Philadelphia where they get swept. The offense is just awful, to be honest. And then, of course, with 12 games to go, decision is made to let Ned Yost go. How I mean, that had to be just a brutally tough decision. Was it sort of a, we're at a point where we just have to try anything because we're so close to the finish line? And, you know, the Brewers have been up five games, and then they're 2.5 games back going into the home stretch of the season from that wild card spot. What was just how, I mean, how difficult was that? That had to be just a tough time for you guys.
Yeah, it was tough. I was, you know, those decisions are always tough, and I don't want to get into it too much, but I did feel that Ned deserved the chance to finish the season out because he hung with this team through the losing seasons.
Right.
You know, and he made one of the great lines, statements that a manager has ever made to me as a general manager. When our younger players were struggling a couple of years previously, in 07, 08, J.J. Hardy was struggling and Ricky Weeks was struggling, and there was a lot of people said, send them out, send them to the minor leagues, you know, they're not ready yet. And Ned said, I'll take losses on my back now for wins in the future for those kids.
Yeah.
And that was one of the more powerful statements for me by a manager that you don't see a lot from. Managers are in tough positions. They're in tough chairs, and there's a lot of criticism coming from all angles,
just
from fans, from internally at times, and that. And I wish the opportunity would have allowed us to win a few more games and allow Ned to have finished that out, because I think he did deserve to at least go out and finish. I think we went 7-5 the last 12 games.
Yep.
In that, but he deserved that opportunity, and that, because the player, the younger players that he hung with, that they were a huge part of why we did well.
For sure. Happy ending for Ned Yost. He goes to two World Series, wins one of them with the Royals, and is entrenched there for a long time. So it does work out for him. The Brewers, like you said, under Dale Swain, they go 7-5. They do go to the playoffs. September 28th, the last day of the season. Well, it's a crazy final week because there's that series I'll never forget against the Pirates with a couple walk-off home runs. Prince Fielder, Ryan Braun with a grand slam in there. It was just an awesome. I mean, that final week, was that tense for you, the final week? Was it fun? It was not as fun for me as I look back on it now, it was fun. But, you know, at the time, I was.
They're all tense. When you're in a pennant race, every game is tense, you know.
Yeah.
You sometimes don't sleep at night, and your days seem so long waiting till the next game. You know, that's the part that when you're a general manager and you lose a game, you can't wait till you get 8 hours. You go home, but 8 hours in the daytime, say, what am I doing now? I can't do anything else to help the team.
Yeah.
You know, you're in the final few weeks. What else can I do? You can't do anything else. You're sitting there just you hear, you're talking about the game so much, you get worn out talking about the previous games at times. And sometimes it's good to just get away and that. But no, they're all tense. You know, every move's tense. Every decision is tense in that regard. But we had enough veteran players on that team with Kendall and Cameron and CC, and Supon had been through it too, you know, with the Cardinals before. And then our young kids were tough. They were tough guys. Prince Fielder and Ricky Weeks were tough guys.
Yeah.
I always said I didn't think our team had been as tough after Prince and Ricky left over a few years later. I thought they brought a mental toughness in the clubhouse that we sort of lacked after that a little bit. But they brought a mental toughness, a blue-collar, construction hat attitude to the clubhouse.
Yeah. Everybody remembers the Braun home run in the eighth inning on that last day of the season. They remember Sabathia celebrating, finishing off the complete game. Are there other things that really resonate in your mind that you really remember from that last game of the season?
No, that was big. It was even close. It was tight at that point. I think Derek Lee hit the ground ball that the double play that ended the game, you know, and who's not to say CC could have hung a slider and he hits a two-run homer. And,
for sure.
And we may not be sitting here, you know, doing this.
Oh,
but
man.
And CC made big pitches when he had to, and that was the thing that we made big plays, you know, at the time, and you just look at it and how that all came together. It was a lot of fun. Had to have fun. And September was pretty tense though, because we weren't playing well. We weren't scoring runs. We weren't playing the way we did in July and August, and that we had, I think, 2 7 or 8 game winning streaks in August.
Yeah.
And when you're going that good, I think we were 25-6 or some, and you have to have that streak. The one thing that I remember also, I think, but it's usually when teams are winning, is sometimes you're playing teams that are under 500, but you have to win those games.
Yeah.
And then when you play the teams that are good teams that are above 500, you got to go head to head with them and at least play 500. But if you play even 500 against the good teams and beat the teams you're supposed to, you're in good shape.
Yeah.
And that. So, but no, there was just so much. I wasn't a general manager that went down and hung out in the clubhouse.
Yeah.
I didn't do that after games. I would get in my car and go home and let them celebrate.
Yeah.
And just, I'd celebrate in the car by myself, listening to other games or radio or my favorite music or something.
And
would enjoy it. And, you know, in that regard. So I was never in the clubhouse to really engage in their successes and that. But I wanted to make sure our front offices and our baseball operations people were engaged and they were feeling good. And that's what was important to me.
So Sabathia finishes 17 starts, 11-2, 1.65 ERA that year. I think he had denied a contract extension with Cleveland that was, I think, 4 years, 70-some million. I don't know, and I know the Brewers made an offer to him, but was it seems like there just wasn't any chance that the Brewers were going to be able to bring him back. I think everyone even understood that at the time. Did you feel like there was a point where you might be able to get him back in Milwaukee after that year?
I was in Las Vegas at the time, I think, and I met with his agent, Greg Genske, and I didn't think that there was, we make an offer, but I just didn't think there was going to be a chance for us to sign him.
Yeah.
And I know that what he did to help us, and I knew that he liked Milwaukee, he liked his time there, but I don't begrudge players when they become free agents. I think it's the world you live in today. You don't ever get your hopes up that you're going to keep your own guys. And I'd already been through it because every player, good player we traded for, left us in free agency.
Yeah.
We traded for, it started back with Carlos Lee.
Yep.
And we made a good trade. Carlos Lee did a good job for us. We thought we had him, thought he liked Milwaukee, would he sign here? I remember going in the office the one day and told Mark Attanasio, Mark was in town, and said, let's make our best offer to Carlos Lee.
Yeah.
And we did it. We made him a $55 million, $11 million a year for 5 years, and that was our best offer. I said to Adam Katz, I said, Adam, we might have to move him if we don't see that there's a chance of signing. So Adam called back within an hour and said, Doug, you aren't even close.
Oh.
So we traded him at midnight. I think it was that night.
I think he got $100 million.
And he got $100 million. So, yeah. And I remember when Cordero, the relief pitcher, Francisco Cordero, we had traded for him. He performed for us for 2 years, a lot of saves.
And then he left for like $2 million more in
Cincinnati. Yeah, and then he left to go to Cincinnati. Yeah. And
that led into Gagne and Torres right thereafter. Yeah. He missed out on the playoffs there.
But it seemed like every player that we had traded for, and then Sabathia. Mm-hmm. And there was one more I thought that we traded for that we left for free agency. But, yeah, just so I had sort of been accustomed to thinking that anybody that's going to be a free agent. And it's, you know, most clubs are that way. Once they get into that final year, they're so close to finding out what their true worth and value is. They're going to test the market, and I don't begrudge that. I think that's just the way that players are today. I think and people in any industry probably would be the same thing. There's always people that working for certain companies will say, I wonder what if I just put my name out there,
right,
what I'd be worth and that. So after one visit with the agent, I knew that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah. So the Brewers, like I said, they lose in 4 games to the Phillies, but 3 years later, they go back to the playoffs in 2011. Famously, there's a trade before the season that plays into the success there, the acquisition of Zach Greinke for 4 players, 2 of which are now back with the Brewers. But did what happened in 2008 in any way inform what happened 3 years later, the big trade acquisition, putting your chips in again to get the big, you know, starting pitcher free agent on the market? Was having the success in 08, did that at all lead into 2011, which was actually a much better year in win-loss record?
That's the other player that was traded for that went free agency. That we lost.
Oh, yeah, Zach Greinke.
Yeah,
sure.
Carlos Lee, Cordero, Zach Greinke, and CeCe.
Sure, yeah.
So, yeah, no, I just did the same thing. As I think we always had a problem. I always felt that our park was going to be, Miller Park is going to be a tough park to sign a free agent pitcher.
Yeah, you're right.
I think it's pitchers view it as a hitter's park, whether the numbers say it or not, but pitchers view it as a hitter's park. Mm-hmm. And so to try to go and sign a free agent pitcher, you know, we signed Supon, we signed the Braden Loopers, we signed other guys, and we never had you're never able to get the top of the A-list pitchers in free agency. They're either the demands were too high, or they didn't want to necessarily come to Milwaukee. And we traded for CeCe, so we basically did it again, but this time we were going to have control for a year and a half,
right,
of Greinke. And the Greinke trade was, we were on his no trade list. And I had to convince Dayton Moore of a trade that they would be satisfied with, that would allow us to convince Greinke to come here.
Sure. Yeah.
Which we did. I privately met with Dayton in that, because he was supposedly traded to Washington, but I think turned down the deal.
Got it. Okay.
So that was the same way. Put a guy at the top of your rotation. I'm still a big believer in having 2 or 3 starters that go deep into ball games and give you 200, 220 innings,
right,
and take off the workload of the bullpen. And it helps a manager, too, to manage better if he's got a couple guys that can go deep into games. And Zach was that guy. We're very confident. And he did the job for us. You know, he never lost a game in Miller Park, I think.
No.
And he did the job for us. And that's the one thing, is that very difficult to pitch in Miller Park for guys. Just like I said, guys, whenever I view a hitter's park as a park that guys can go opposite field and hit home runs fairly regular basis, and that. But he did a good job, but that was similar. We had to give up some good players to get Zach.
Yep. We should do, in 3 years, we'll do another one of these, and we can talk, because there's the Sean Markham acquisition, there's obviously Greinke, there's Nigel Morgan that year, there's a lot that goes into 2011. As well. So now I'm kind of curious, kind of what you're up to now. And there's still a deal that you made before you departed as general manager. The deal that brought Josh Hader and Domingo Santana, Adrian Hauser, Brett Phillips. I mean, you've got to kind of relish that, right? That you're still leaving an imprint on the current Brewers, and that they're having some success with these guys.
Yeah, and you know, we've traded Corey Knebel, and
that's also
January we traded for him, and then after the Houston trade, the next day we traded for Zach Davies.
That's right, for Gerardo Parra.
Yeah,
looks very good.
The day after, so, you know, when I look and see the Davies and Knebel and Hader and the contributions there. And guys that came from the system, like I said, I don't think the club needed to totally rebuild.
Right.
That's just, I think that there's, you can retool if you want to, or remake the roster if you want to. And I think David and the staff have done a good job in doing that. But I didn't think it had to be totally read. I think we just had a bad the year we were in first place, 150 games. We just didn't pull it out, and then the next year we got off to a bad start. And it's not like I view the teams that win 60 games 3-4 years in a row. Those are the ones that you have to say that's a
full rebuild.
Full rebuild. Mm-hmm. But there were still good players. We still had LaCroix and Chris Davis and Gene Segura and Scooter Jeanette, guys all having success. Even now you look at Mitch Haniger.
It's
one of the better players.
Start.
Very good player that we gave up in the Parra deal and that. And, you know, Thornburg brought back Shaw. So there's a lot of players that our system, that Bruce Side, our scouting director who passed away, that had brought into our system. Jacob Barnes was a late draft pick. Scooter was a late draft pick. And guys, so there's still players contributing from the staff and the people that I had here. Yeah. And David and his staff have done a good job in remaking the club in that. And then putting counsel in the managerial position too. So those were sort of the things that I did as I had prepared my exit strategy.
Sure.
Prepared my exit strategy to presented it to Mark Attanasio and said, I know that Mark maybe wanted to go with someone younger. I was prepared at age 65, once I was 65 and had 20 years as a GM and 45, 47 plus years in the game, I was prepared to step aside and observe and watch and advise in whatever role they want me to do. And so I'll go see our minor league teams just to stay connected. I'll go into the office and have coffee with the coaches and Craig Council and that, because I've known Craig as here as a player. He worked in the front office for me, and
right.
And then we gave him the manager's job when we made the decision on Ron Renneke and that. And then I'll go see David upstairs and that. You know, games changed a little bit in that, but I understand that.
Sure.
And I love the game. It's been great to me. So. But I still enjoy watching it and still enjoy the strategy of games and that. So.
All right, Doug, thank you so much. Doug Melvin, former general manager of the Milwaukee Brewers, the architect of the 2008 team that is celebrating its 10th anniversary this year. Thanks, Doug. I will do this again in 3 years. We totally should do it.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
That'll do it for our special edition of the Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. Again, join me later in the week on Thursday. We will have yet another episode looking at this Brewers baseball team. They will have the Pirates series in the rearview mirror at that point, be coming back home for 4 big games against division rival St. Louis Cardinals, with the Royals to follow after that, then the Reds, and then they come back home for another homestand. So a lot of home baseball. This stretch the Brewers are in, where they have a stretch of 30 games in 31 days that is definitely going to be pretty taxing. But as they get toward that All-Star break, this is really going to be a time where they can sort of, I guess, separate themselves from other top teams in the NL and show just how serious they are, as they have been in some pretty heady territory in the last few weeks of the season. Again, we will chat with Tom and Todd next time in a few days. Thanks for checking in with us. We'll catch you again soon.
With Car Guru's Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and Car Guru's Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder Car Guru's is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with Car Guru's at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.
Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas has styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.